everyone. Welcome back. This is Lana. It's been a while, but I am back in action with 314. My guest is the ever lively and talkative Walter T. Richmond, author of the new book, Vikings Rising. We are going to jam through a ton of topics in a short period of time. This is a great program full of stats and stories for normies. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show, although at times highly annoying. But remember that in the end, we are gonna win. Welcome, Walter, fellow Slav. It's been a while. Good to have you back.
Hey, Lana, it's great to be back. I can't believe it's been 2 quick years.
That's right. We did an interview back in March 2016. You wrote a book, Hasta La Vista, Europe, What You're Not Being Told About the Refugee Crisis and How It's Destroying Europe. Now, a lot's happened since we spoke 2 years ago, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, interestingly enough, in looking back at what we wrote in that book, it's unbelievable how much worse it's gotten. And almost every prediction and almost every segment that we exposed in Hasta La Vista, Europe has just ripened and gotten far worse across the board. I mean, the blatant migrant violence, criminality. We actually have a site called Hasta La Vista, Europe on Facebook where we update what's happening in Europe. And I think the address is Europe in Trouble. So it's Facebook Europe in Trouble. And daily, weekly, monthly, there is no end to what's going wrong in Europe with this migrant invasion. And I use the term invasion specifically because it really is.
I would say, though, that faster is better because a lot of people have been waking up because of it, as opposed to a slow and steady trickle that people don't notice. And then 50 years from now, they're like, oh, shoot, where's all the white people? You know, it's easier when you see them storming the gates, coming in and expressing their hatred and violence, right?
Oh, no doubt. 2 days ago, there was an update on the Hasta La Vista site that showed 800 Africans stormed the border in Spain.
Yep.
Because Spain has a part of Africa, right? So they stormed the border in Spain on Spanish territory with actual machetes, hammers, knives, and chainsaws and electric saws. So yeah. These people, and it wasn't a joke. It was really violent.
They come with peace and love. Oh, and it goes even further. They were throwing their own shit at the police.
Yes.
Yes, I mean, you know, people call them monkeys and they're like, that's racist. Well, monkeys throw their shit at people.
Yes. Anybody who's been at a circus or a zoo and seen the animal cages know that that's exactly what they do. On African safari, I learned that the hard way. But interestingly enough, the press kind of just glosses over this stuff. Now, just to be fair, a lot of times, and I'm very guilty of it myself, I'll say things like the media doesn't tell you. The reality is they do tell you. Everything that we source in Hasta La Vista, Europe, and we did all the footnotes, and in Vikings Rising, the new book, everything is meticulously sourced, and it's usually from the media. The difference is the media doesn't concentrate on it. They report it somewhere on page 3000, right? But they don't focus on it. They'll focus Russian collusion, Russian collusion, Russian collusion. But they won't focus on Europe's in trouble, Europe's in trouble, Europe's in trouble. So I just wanted to say that up front. A lot of times people say, oh, but it is in the press. Yeah, it is, but it's not focused on.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the spin that they put on it. Oh, these people are great. They're bringing diversity and peace and love, our countries will fall apart without them, right?
Yeah. And so in Hasta La Vista, Europe, we showed that the diversity they bring is a multitude of diseases that had been eradicated off of Europe for hundreds of years. And now all of a sudden, they're back.
Now, your new book is called Vikings Rising, like the title, How Intolerant Leftists, Violent Commies, Liars, Psychopaths, Fake Newsers, and the Darlings of the Mainstream Media Unleashed a Movement, which breaks down the various ways these filthy lefties have basically nestled their way into the minds of Americans, but also helped to create a giant that I think will ultimately crush them. So what were your intentions with this book?
Right. Well, so the premise of the book is that Vikings are rising, and Vikings are not a specific group like people from Sweden or anything like that. It's people who have woken up. And we chose Vikings because if you say, we wanted a new name, we wanted to say, oh, they're Vikings. Because if you say, oh, they're alt-right, right, patriots, right-wingers, traditionalists, conservatives, there are just too many different monikers. So we just said, oh, let's just call it Vikings. We'll do the symbol for Vikings as the peace sign. And in part of the book, we say, hey, listen, when Vikings see each other and they're Vikings rising, they do the peace sign. And it doesn't mean peace. It's a V for Vikings, and it also stands for two genders. You know, it's like, dude, two genders. So when you see people doing a peace sign, you have to ask yourself now, man, are those Vikings rising? Is that two genders? You know. So the premise of the book was people are waking up, and it is because the libtards, the nouveau left, the commies, whatever you want to call these leftists, have just pushed the envelope so incredibly far that what did you think would happen? Of course people are waking up.
They can't help themselves. And they just can't help it. They just push and push and push and push, and then they're shocked when they're, you know, getting some backlash. It's unbelievable.
We felt that. There's a group of us, and I keep saying we. I do most of the writing and editing, but I've got a group of people, also authors, reporters, ex-law enforcement, whatever, a whole group of people that we compile information and say, did you see this? Did you see this? Did you see this? Because if it's one person doing it, it's very hard.
Yeah.
You know, you really can't cover it. Just so much garbage is happening all at once. But the premise was the left is out of control. The left has gone so far left, it's unbelievable. They're going to cause their own demise. Vikings are going to rise. Vikings are going to take back what they want to take back.
It also seems like a cycle, like we've been here before in different ways in the past. I try and compare it to Red Terror, you know, communists reign. It's long. They do a lot of damage. But in the end, it always fails. And that's how I see this with liberalism. Although looking back, the communists of old, they were actually more nationalistic and pro-white than the people today. So we have a different level of challenges. But go on.
Yeah, it's an interesting dichotomy. And you're right. Whenever we have conversations with, you know, communist supporters or whatever, the one question we ask is, name one country, just one, out of all the countries in the world where it's actually worked. And they can't. Even if they blurt out, ooh, China. Well, China had to change their economic system in order to be successful, quote unquote successful, right? So it's never worked. We're pretty sure it never will work. So,
and even when they point at North Korea, it's pretty much an ethno state. So I wouldn't really compare that.
Yes. No. And North Korea could hardly be, you know, the poster child for successful communism. I mean, the guy had his own brother killed because he got pissed off. So, you know, whatever. The media seems to forget that. You know, they're sitting right in the same room with a guy who had his brother killed. Mm. And they're fawning over the beauty of his daughter at the Olympics. It's like border, you know, you're sitting there going, this is libtardia. This is the altered states of America. We're never going to be back to where we were.
Yeah, well, let's get real here too, because there's millions of people who are sick and tired of the left. They're fed up with anti-white hysteria. There's even the walk away movement of Democrats leaving the party. And we've been saying this, that a lot of these liberals were going to get tired of a lot of the anti-white hate because they've been fighting for social justice and minorities, and even they are getting shat on. So even these people are now walking away. But you list some of the big bullet points of, you know, things and ideas that really got us into this current mess where, and there's a lot of angles and ends to it, really from every angle possible, you know, things that people are completely done with. So I think that we should go through the major themes, the areas why they attack, and you can provide us with some, you know, kind of fun stats or stories. You start with content one in the beginning of the book, done with guilt. Now that's a good place to begin.
Right. So every chapter says done with something. And a preface to all of this is you have to be aware of the fact that the communists used, the Bolshevik party used something called agitprop, right? So agitation combined with propaganda used to shape public opinion. And that's what they did in newscasts, films, artwork, plays, newspapers, school curriculum, speeches, literature, anything they could do, they used agitprop. They agitated and they used propaganda. So let's preface the whole thing by saying that's happening to us today, especially the Hollywood studios, especially the people who own the media, especially the people in the school districts. And we'll go through that real quick in a moment. But this is not something that's just happening by mistake. It's completely thought out, and it's agitprop, and it's a Bolshevik trick, literally from the Bolsheviks. So that's what, you know, the premise of the book is. We want people to start to realize what's happening, not just saying, oh, I'm angry about it, but realize why it's happening. So you're right. The first thing we say is done with guilt. And that really tackles this whole attack on Europeans. It's the force of transgenerational guilt. So somehow we're supposed to feel guilty as European Americans or Europeans anywhere that somehow there was colonialism, there was slavery, etc. And what our premise is we're done with guilt. How can we be guilty for something we didn't do? I'm not talking about empathy or sympathy for people who were victimized hundreds of years ago, but today there are no slaves in America and there are no slave owners in America. Let's forget about some of the Asians that come here with slaves from that they bring from Philippines or Pakistan and they're found in their closet, you know, for decades. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about actual Americans haven't and don't own slaves right now and shouldn't feel guilty because they never did it. And that's the part that we're done with, guilt. We're done with guilt because why should we feel guilty?
Yeah.
Now, what is interesting is we ask, why is it just European Americans that seem to, well, Europeans are being meant to feel guilty, right? It's 2018. Nobody in a who's living today ever owned a slave.
It's the current year, man. Get with it.
That's right.
Slavery is over.
So what's with the slave? So you have to go back into history to find this, right? And we coined the term guiltinization, where they're pushing guilt on people, not to feel guilty for something that they did or for an action they did or committed or for their own actions that they should be responsible for, but for guiltinization, man. It's you're guilty for what your forefathers did. And then we ask the obvious question. The Muslims, right, they had crusades against Christianity and they had crusades against anybody around them. And they also were big slave traders. Why aren't they being made to feel guilty, right? So there are no guilt trips. Then we look at the Israelites. Oh my goodness, go to any church or synagogue, pick up literally the Old Testament. And according to the people that wrote the Old Testament, 2.8 million up to 24.9 million, if you estimate for other things that are listed, people were killed or slaughtered by the Israelites or their Old Testament God. So the question is, that's some serious numbers. Why is there no guilt assigned transgenerationally back to those people? And finally, something that we found absolutely abhorrent, Newsweek magazine ran with a cover story in 2009 with a little white baby on it and said, is your baby racist?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, remember that? So the premise being there's no chance your kid's a racist. And then we detail a horrific experiment done in rural Ohio by a teacher and some researchers on a class of 6 and 7 year olds, where they messed with their heads about Santa Claus and traditions and all that stuff. And I don't want to go into it right now because it's that shocking. You got to read it in the book because it's just, but you know, if you're a traditional man, you'll see red when you hear what they did to these kids. So that kind of brings us into done with being enslaved by slavery, which is the next chapter. And, you know, we ask the obvious question. Currently today, Lana, did your family own slaves? My family didn't own slaves.
Nope.
No, but nobody you know or you could find ever owned slaves.
My families were in Russia, man.
Yeah, we had our own problems. Man, those winters were tough. But, you know, in the context of the world, we also throw out there, listen, is if transgenerational guilt, which is what people are trying to force on Europeans, right? Transgenerational guilt. You are guilty because of something that happened many generations back. We make the point, well, are the relatives of Bill Cosby going to be held guilty for his sex crimes? Mm-hmm. You know, 3 generations from now, should Bernie Madoff's, that Ponzi scheme guy, children's children be made to feel guilty for what he did? I mean, it's pretty preposterous. There used to be a time in America where you were responsible for yourself, nobody else, you. And now it seems like now you're responsible for people you never met who may have been, you know, related to you at some point. But then we go through ancient Rome, the ancient Arab Muslim slave traders, the Slavic regions. You know, white slavery in the Slavic regions was pretty horrific. There were 2.5 million people, Russians, Ukrainians, and Poles, who were enslaved from 1450 to 1700 by the Muslims.
That's right.
That's not an insignificant number. And it wasn't that much longer ago than the experience of Black African Americans in America. Now, The libtards will give you this whole version of pre-colonial America where there's some sort of idyllic wonderland. And it really wasn't. I mean, the Native Americans routinely fought wars and enslaved the people they captured.
Right.
And when they were done torturing them or doing ritual sacrifices, sometimes they'd keep them as prisoners. And often enough, they'd just kill them or eat them, you know, and they've just found new archaeological evidence of Native Americans eating some of the people that they captured.
That's right.
In Wisconsin. So,
and they weren't the first. They didn't spring from the grass of America. There's a lot of old history that people don't talk about. But if you want to play this game, why didn't they just open their hearts to diversity and multiculturalism when the Europeans came and said, hey, man, we're all immigrants. So let's mix it up. Welcome. Right.
Yeah. Opening their hearts along the lines of the Mayans, right?
Where they would
pull it right out of you. Right, eat it. But so I think that in fairness, and this is where the discussion gets so dicey, because if you ever bring up anything except what's being focused on, you've somehow become some sort of evil person, or racist or demon or something. But no, you know, actually facts aren't racist. Facts are what they are. So, you know, I didn't learn in school about all these other people with slaves, but you know, there are researchers. The historian Tia Miles did a whole study and found that there were about 3,500 slaves that the American Indians, the Native Americans, kept across. I think it's the Creeks, the Choctaws. I'm not sure if it was the Chickasaws as well, but across three nations, up to the 19th century. You know, they had them. So the worst part of it is that in the United States, blacks owned blacks as well. And in 1830, there were about 2,000 slaves. And remember, there were 2.5 million Slavic slaves. So there's 2 million slaves in America. These are huge numbers, but no one ever hears about the Slavic slaves. And approximately maybe 14% of the total black population was free at the time. And of that group, of the 3,700 free blacks, they owned 12,000 or more slaves themselves. Mm-hmm. So it was almost the thing to do at the time amongst the black population as well. Hey, man, I got successful. I'm black. I'm getting myself some slaves because now I'm a free man.
Yep.
So the bottom line, what we're trying to make is slavery is never right. It's never correct. And it's horrific. It's terrible. It's the worst thing you can do to someone is enslave them. But at the time, that's what was going on.
It's an ancient institution, nothing unique to Europeans.
Right, and to pretend that Europeans somehow invented it is borderline insane.
But we did end it.
We did end it, and we mentioned in the book, you know, where are the movies about the, you know, 500,000, 600,000, 700,000, mostly white men that fought to, you know, the Civil War and then had slavery end. Here's the quick, wacky thing that we really wanted to focus on that people don't. 94% of Africans enslaved in the transatlantic slave trade were shipped to South America and Caribbean, and only 3.6% were taken to North America. And I think that's a fact that just
it was like 400,000 blacks that came to America in the end. Yeah.
Yeah. And the worst part, and then maybe we can move on to the next one, but African slaves in Africa exist today. You know, they're still at it in Africa. And so we suggest, DW reported in 2014 that there are about 6.4 million slaves in Africa today, right now. So we were suggesting that maybe we should fund a trip for Antifa, who's, you know, anti-slave. Oh, you people are so terrible. Whites must die. And send them to Africa and say, hey, listen, you want a chance at today, right now, freeing actual slaves? Go for it, baby. We'll pay your way.
I have to just add this real quick for our Southern folks. I know the Civil War was not all about slavery. It was already phasing on the way out. And the height of slavery in the South, only 6% of families owned slaves, and they were more of the elite family. So it was more of a tariff war. But yes, in the end, we did end it.
Yes. And I think when we were doing research, we didn't put this in because it wasn't a book about the Civil War.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
We found out that they might have been only about 4%. Of Southerners that owned slaves. And the interesting thing was, is that we found almost no mention of slavery in anyone's papers that we could see, you know, fighting for slavery or against slavery. Most of the stuff that we saw was states' rights. So a lot of apologists go, oh, no, it was about the slaves because this one said this. Yeah, but the reality is Lincoln was sitting there trying to figure out how to send all the slaves back to Africa.
Yep.
And we actually were in Washington, D.C. Within the last year and looked at the Library of Congress and some of his papers and all. And he literally, in those days, people would write down what the president was saying. It was kind of like a fake stenographer, but not as accurate. But in one of those minutes of meetings that we saw, he was actually seriously trying to figure out how to send all these slaves back.
Well, that would have been the right thing to do, honestly, send them back home.
So. Yeah. I mean, you know, we tore them. If they were torn away from their country, they should have gone.
They did have an opportunity to go back, and many didn't. And then they formed also Liberia. They brought them the U.S. Constitution. They said, here, you can have a home. And cannibal wars happened, unfortunately.
Yes, unfortunately. But, you know, one of the points we make is Hollywood is entertainment, not history. And so many kids today, I feel really saddened when you see what Hollywood churns out, because, you know, there are all these warped movies about, you know, white slavers. And I think it's a disservice to people to try to program them to think that fiction is fact, you know?
Yep, I agree.
So that leads us to the next chapter, which is done with thinning history. And thinning history, believe it or not, is a phrase that a fella came up with in order to describe how he single-handedly, I believe in Sweden, is trying to thin history by actually throwing out stuff that they find in archaeological digs, especially around Viking ruins. So they'll find ancient Viking rings and ancient breastplates and weapons
too.
And things.
Yeah, sickening.
In Sweden, yes. And they melt the stuff down. They throw it out into heap piles because... And so the point we make is like, this can't be happening. Maybe someone will come in to defend it. How about the new Swedish National Heritage Board director?
Muslim guy there.
Yeah. So we find out. Yeah. So one of the guys sends us, yeah, you're not going to believe this. This guy's actually anti-history. And we said, nah, it can't be.
Unbelievable. Yeah. It's real, folks.
Yeah. So I think what's crazy about it is that this guy's from Pakistan. He's a Muslim, and he's very proud of the fact that he's never read anything about culture or heritage, and studied, I believe, film and Arabic in school. He never studied culture or archaeology or any of this stuff. And his whole thing, and this is the terrifying part, is he thinks anybody that tries to preserve history is actually xenophobic and evil because that's not welcoming to migrants.
Yeah. And unbelievable.
I can't say no more. It's just stupid. But okay.
Utterly stupid.
Yeah. And then that brings us to historical erasure. We speak about the tried and true system of erasing history. In Egypt, pharaohs would change other people's names or scratch them out. In China, one of the first emperors burnt all the historical books that came before him. In 210 or 213 BC, simply because he didn't want to be judged against what had happened before. Mm-hmm. In 1917, of course, the Bolsheviks, who, you know, hated ethnic Russians, they burnt down all the churches. Afghanistan's blowing up statues of Buddha. Iraq, a couple of years ago, maybe 2015, ISIS was videotaped. They ran into museums and they just smashed everything up because, you know, these are idol worship. So in any case, the interesting thing we found out is in 2006, African professors at the University of Ghana actually were removing the statue of Mohandas Gandhi. And here's something we had no clue. We thought Gandhi was this peace-loving guy, blah, 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 right? He's glorified everywhere you go. A little bit of research revealed that Gandhi was actually pretty vicious racist and really didn't like black people.
That's
so
right.
That was interesting to us because, you know, the press really never covers all that
they
stuff.
They sure don't. He's a saint. Don't even question it, okay? It's like questioning Nelson Mandela. Come on, you just don't do it. He's a saint.
Ignore the burning tires. Nothing to see here. Yeah. Just keep Mandela's
get
fine.
The mass murderer. Just keep walking.
I think if any European was filmed with his fist in the air singing kill the whatever, fill in the dots, like Mandela was kill the Boers, I think the reaction would have been different.
Definitely.
But because Mandela was, whatever, right? And then one of our favorite guys, Charlie Daniels, the Country Music Hall of Famer, he said, hey, man, if you don't like statues, don't look at them. There's lots of stuff I don't like. I walk down the street, I can't stand this music poster, or I don't like this film thing. You know, I just look the other way.
It's about conquest. That's what it's about.
So as you well know, the leftists are pushing very hard to make sure that that goes away. The thing is, though, they're really going far, and they're seeing Confederacy and racism everywhere. One of the details we show is the New York City subway put in a design of subway tiles, right? And some idiot said, oh, those are Confederate flags. They didn't even look close
to the
Confederate flags.
They're getting paranoid conspiracy theorists. They're seeing like Nazis and white supremacy in every pattern everywhere. It's hilarious.
Yeah, somewhere in the book we say that there's this one guy that can find a Nazi under every bed. But so one of the things we wanted to juxtapose was, so the Jefferson Memorial, the National Mall stewards, announced that they're going to add a little thing that says, and Jefferson was a slaveholder, to his memorial. And to date, we haven't seen the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial have anything talked about adding a plaque that says, and Martin Luther King Jr. plagiarized his dissertation for a doctoral degree.
And was a communist.
Yeah. But you forget about even the communist thing, because that seems to be in vogue.
Yeah, the plagiarism is huge, of course.
That's huge.
And I've even heard people say, well, it doesn't matter. He was a messenger and got the good message out.
And I think that's one of the texts that the takes, Lana. You bring up a really good point. Further on, when we talk about hoax hate crimes, mm-hmm. the left never attacks the idiot that created the hoax and put people's lives in danger and first responders who are flying to the scene and everything. They never say, oh, that was bad. They say, oh, but thank you for starting the conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
So crazy. So then here's something we found. Under the chapter, Done with Rented Supporters, and I'm going to ask that listeners really read that part carefully. We make the point, all is not as it seems. And the question is, could it possibly be that what you're seeing is not only orchestrated by, or spun by the media, but maybe the people there aren't really even supporters? And a company called Crowds on Demand lists on their website that they have over 30,000 actors across the nation, and it can roll them out whenever you want, for whatever reason you want, pro, against, whatever. And this is absolutely terrifying because, you know, we've now become our own reality show, but it's not real. It's not real. And we detail quite a few examples of what they've done in the past. And NBC, to their credit, actually went out under a thing that said their report was called Concerned Citizens Turn Out to Be Political Theater.
Yeah.
And they actually reported it, man. You know, these guys that were impassionate about, you know, they had impassioned pleas to their representatives and all fake, yep. All actors.
They play dirty. Yeah. They lie. They have to pay people for everything.
Yes, which is, you know, unfathomable. I mean, it's, seriously, man, your argument isn't good enough. And one of the themes that we came up with is, if your argument is baseless, you're a racist. And the point is if I can't fight what you're saying with facts, then I have to smear you. And the big smear right now is racist,
white supremacist, Nazi, racist.
That's right.
I mean, seriously, who cares what names they call you? There's nothing more sickening to me than seeing a grown man just fall and crumble because he was called a racist, and the way they backpedal, no, I'm not a racist. I mean, it's the most pathetic thing I can think of.
Yeah. And so in the book somewhere, because we figured hopefully younger people who have maybe are waking up from their indoctrination in school or high school or college or whatever would get the book and start reading it, we actually say, well, if someone calls you a racist, just turn around and say, no, you're the racist, because liberals can't handle that. And if you say it loud enough, they shrink in fear. It's like, you know, they threw the bucket of water on you, you didn't shrivel, and now you're throwing it on them, and they're like the witch, just like,
because for them, Dems are the real racists?
Yeah, no doubt. So then, you know, we're thinking to ourselves, well, at least the net is still neutral, at least, you know. And then we really uncovered a whole mess of stuff that, forget about what's currently happening with doxing and cutting off platforms and all. Net neutrality used to be the one shining beacon. I'm not sure that any type of European movement could have gotten half as far if the net weren't pretty much as neutral as it is right now.
Yeah, it's been the Wild West, this wild frontier, and now they're realizing, oh, shoot, we're losing because of it, so now we need to clamp down against all these right-wing extremist Nazi supremacists, you know, because we're gaining more ground than they are with all their billions of dollars and mainstream news, you know.
Exactly. So researchers from the University of Management at the University of Iowa and Facebook, believe it or not, issued a report, which they probably wish they could have brought back, that large-scale reputation manipulation services on Facebook leverage the principle of collusion. So in other words, if you have the right platform, you can manipulate what happens on Facebook and on Twitter and on the internet from the outside as well. So let's say there's a cell site in a small foreign country, maybe in the Middle East, I'm not sure where that could be, and there are 5,000 little terminals and everybody's hitting like on a comment, right? That comment skyrockets to the top. And with, unfortunately, the amount of brain power that today's sheeple have at times, they'll say, oh, well, that must be good. It must be trending.
It has all these likes. It must be true.
Yes. And it, in fairness, it's not just done for nefarious reasons. It's also done, well, it's not ethical, but corporations are doing it to propel sales. So there are three different flashlights, and one of them has gazillions of likes and positive reviews, which are all manipulated. That's the one that sells, you know, through the roof. So it's done for a lot of reasons. But let me tell you something. The whole left side has figured out how to use it for opinions and comments and agreement, you know. Oh, you have to support gun control because the children are marching for it. And look, there's 5 billion likes. Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. And they're going to protect us when the real bad guys come across the borders with their, you know, like little, what are they going to use? You know, books?
Okay.
Yeah. So there's also something that came up and then we were very concerned about that in Europe. Under the guise of, oh, we want to better protect copyrights, the EU is doing a link tax that would actually require taxes put on linking to articles. So if you were to link to an article in a paper, you would be charged a tax for it.
That's right. And this is obviously an attempt to shut down alternative media because we have a lot of commentary about a lot of the BS news that they're putting out and they want to stop that.
Right. In effect, that's exactly what it does. And the same geniuses also want to charge a library's fees for renting and lending activities. So, you know, you can't just have a library anymore. Now, every time you lend out the book, you have to pay a fee, which is absolutely borderline insane. That's not what a library is, but oh well. And then we also say, you know, if you think that we're just panicking or we're just making too much of it, how about looking at Sir Tim Berners-Lee? That's the guy who actually invented the internet, not Al Gore. But this guy, Sir Tim Berners-Lee, is the real guy. And he said, the web is under threat on March 12, 2018. And Sir Tim is not a panicker. He's just a realist. He wrote on his messaging site, the web is under threat. Join us and fight for it. And then he went through a lot of different things, ending with, this concentration of power creates a new set of gatekeepers, allowing a handful of platforms to control which ideas and opinions are seen and shared. If a guy like Sir Tim is panicking, man, well, let me tell you, man, the rest of us should be.
It's bad.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I would add to this content that you're talking about right here about the, you know, controlling so-called fake news. Facebook also has a filter, you know, quality news. Twitter has it as well. Authoritative news, quality news. And of course, all of our outlets don't qualify as quality news or authoritative news, right? We're all fake news. Anytime it's anyone opposing the left, oh, that's fake news, right?
Yeah, and very, very disconcerting to us, but we didn't have time to put it into the book because we literally would have had to add another 100 pages because there's so much evidence on it. But groups, biased groups, like Tucker Carlson calls them illegitimate groups, like the Southern Poverty Law Center, are actually working with some of these media giants in order to determine what's good and bad.
That's right. YouTube, Twitter, exactly.
Yes. Yes. So not only is there software that scours through, and if you say supremacist or use a derogatory term, and it catches it, and then it goes to some guy's desk who then figures out if you're, you know, a Nazi or not. There are also groups that are actively sitting at their terminals, searching and finding and, you know, doxing and actually burying content that they think isn't to their
liking.
Yeah,
I don't know if you saw, but there was a woman in the UK Parliament. They were having a meeting. She was addressing someone from YouTube there, saying it was a problem that outlets like Red Ice TV were on YouTube and coming up recommended. And what are you going to do about it? So now what they're doing is they're shadow banning, basically. They're hiding you on the internet so your videos don't come up recommended. They don't get the upvotes. Same thing on Twitter. No one sees your tweets. That's their way of banning without outright banning. So they can say, no, you're still there, while they're trying to block you from growing. Essentially, that's what they're doing. And Trump had just said he was going to look into shadow banning practices by Twitter, which is great because it needs to go into that direction where it's illegal. It's political discrimination and they should be blocked from being able to do that.
He should, because he was one of the biggest victims when Twitter decided to rearrange his algorithm. I don't even know what algorithm means anymore. I think it's some sort of commie term. But they tweaked their algorithm and all of a sudden Trump lost a million or two followers. You know, it was just preposterous that they would stand behind it and say, oh, no, there was nothing nefarious. All the Republicans lost a lot of base and all the Democrats were unharmed. Nothing to see here. And it's like, dude.
Yeah, I mean, even me, my followers have been the same. It's been sitting at 35,000 now for like a year. They're literally not, they're not allowing me to have more followers. And a lot of people, other people are having the same problem.
Well, hasta la vista, Europe, on Twitter or Facebook. It's interesting. Some of our tweets where we just basically tweet out what's happening in Europe, and it's usually not good. Some of them hit 1,000, 2,000, 10,000, you know, retweets, likes, whatever. And some of them, like one of the most recent where we showed these 800 Africans storming the border of Spain, sat at 85.
Yeah.
They
demote
okay.
it, they hide it, they quarantine it.
It must have been.
It didn't make the quality filter. That's what's happening.
I like the way you said that. So the next thing we tackled was the old-fashioned controlled fake news media. And we pretty much quickly went over a lot of the trickery and fake news that they create. One of the biggest examples we found was Thanksgiving 2017. MSNBC did a Thanksgiving show, and they actually did it a day before, and they were pretending that it was happening the day after. And it was so pathetically blatant. But, you know, they were eventually caught lying and had to admit, yeah, well, we made the whole thing up. If you look at it, you can't tell that they're making it up, but it was made up. And then you sit back and you go, oh my gosh, they sat there and lied. So, I mean, one of the hosts admitted she'd forgotten to remove the bag of entrails prior to cooking her turkey. They gave details. They didn't just lie. They expanded and they gave details. So for us, we were concerned that that's a sign of what's to come. Brian Ross of ABC, of course, ran with a story that, you know, crashed the stock market. So there are, you know, economic aspects to fake news, and then they had to retract it. They use photo tricks all the time, right? They zoom in very closely to show lots of supporters for one side, and then they pull out to show lots of supporters missing for another side, all fake.
Oh, yeah.
So there are a lot of technical ways that they, you know, control the media. And I think that if one is to live in America, one has to get their media from a lot more than just these prime sources that are called mainstream media or whatever, because they're really not unbiased. And I think every time the left pushes the envelope more to the left, right, you become more and more aware of the fact that it's total bias. And that's what brought us to Charlottesville.
What a show that was, folks.
What a show. Now, if you ask Joe America or Sally America or Muhammad America, what's up with Charlottesville?
They will tell you
the Nazis descended. They had a torch parade like around Dracula's castle. And the next day they grabbed this kid. They ambushed him and beat the crap out of him in a garage. And that was what Charlottesville was all about. Right. So we were sitting around and we're going, we got to put something in because nothing shows fake news more blatantly active than Charlottesville.
And the photo ops. Do you mention some of the photo ops, the like obviously staged ones there? Okay.
Yeah. We went through some of that, but what we fixated on was the attack in the garage. And so literally for about 2 weeks, we got some very sophisticated video software and we went frame by frame and collected everything we could. And I'm sure there's a lot more, Lana, that has never been released or people took down or is on their private Facebook or Twitter or something. There's stuff out there that they may have realized, you know, we don't want anyone to see that because that doesn't make us look good. But we went through meticulously. And here's what we saw frame by frame. First, the police did the whole, some of the guys that we work with are in uniformed services, and there used to be a joke, which I guess is no longer politically correct, but when you get to a fight between two people, you let them fight it out and you arrest the winner. You know, and that just makes it easy on you. And the police did the same thing in Charlottesville. First of all, the police chief was quoted as saying something along the lines of, let them fight it out, it'll be easier to declare an unlawful assembly, right? And then the same police chief disputed the allegations and then retired only 2 weeks following the release of the report that concluded he hadn't been prepared for the rallies and then deleted, by mistake, he says, text messages that were relevant, right? So that was one thing. The police were obviously setting up the thing to fail. The anomalies we found were very, very shocking. First, this guy, Mr. Harris, the guy who was beaten up in the neighboring garage, we followed him from the beginning of the rally. And we found video after video after video of this guy and his crew, which is what he referred to them as in another video. He and his crew are in Charlottesville. They are carrying weapons. They're wearing masks. They're stealing flags from people. They're burning these flags. In one famous picture, we see Mr. Harris throwing a can of soda. And if people don't realize it, a lot of these Antifa types or counter protesters freeze soda cans, right? They freeze them. So now you're throwing a brick. An unfrozen can of soda is pretty bad, but a frozen can is like throwing a brick. So there's a picture of him throwing it into a crowd. And he's seen carrying a long metal flashlight, right? Mm-hmm. And anyone knows, if you've been in uniformed services or if you just Google kill with a flashlight, we list about 10 examples of people who have been beaten to death with a flashlight. A flashlight like he was carrying is a club. It's dangerous. Our point was, is people will say, oh, it's just a flashlight. Well, when it's a metal pipe flashlight, it's very different. There's ample photographic evidence that this crew that he was with was heckling, screaming at. At one point, they're like, let's bring it on, let's bring it on, let's bring the fight on. Black power, black power. So they were agitating the people who had the permit to walk. At one point, as the people are walking by, as the original protesters are walking by with their flags, Mr. Harris is seen in the video, and his crew, they try to grab the flag away. I guess it was a Confederate flag or a European flag. They're trying to grab the flag away from a guy. And as they're tussling back and forth with the flag, and now the media then says, oh, the man with the flag tried to spear the crew. Ridiculous, man. You could easily see that they're just tussling with the flag. Harris winds up and wails the guy in the head. But as he's about to hit him in the head, the guy pulls back and Harris hits him on the side of the face. At that point, some of the protesters came over to protect the man who had just been hit in the head, and they used pepper spray. And then you can see a whole group of people run into the garage, and it looks like one of the crew, one of the black guys that was with Harris, knocks him over, and Harris is just lying on the floor, and the rest of the black guys with poles or bats or whatever they had, clobber some white guys. One white guy is out cold for the rest of the video that we saw. And then there's a tussle, and then they split real fast. Harris stands up and walks into the garage. And that's when he is in that famous video clip that was showed, what was it, like 3.5 million times, being beaten up by the white guys. Now, should they have beaten him up? We didn't discuss any of that. All we said was that was the event. All the media showed you was those last few seconds, right? Oh, look, they ambushed this poor guy, you know? And so we actually overdid the diagnosis. We painfully went over it from every angle we could. There is so much evidence out there that's not being investigated. Now, a former district attorney, I think his name is Heafy, came out with a report at Charlottesville. I guess they thought they were going to get a good report, quote unquote. So they paid him to do a really down and dirty 200-page forensic report. By the way, he supports everything that we found.
Yep.
And we read that report afterwards and we're like, well, that's exactly what we saw. Now, here's another disparity.
Yeah, he faulted police in the report and the failure to protect the public. Yeah.
He did. And then he says in his report that Harris either hit the guy in the head or the shoulder. He couldn't tell. Well, we froze the frames. Maybe he didn't want to tell, but we could tell. It was in the side of the face. A while later, a few seconds later, maybe a minute later, another Antifa guy hit the same guy in the back of the head. But in the slow-mo of that attack, you can already see his hit in the face from Harris. So all the little lies and all the little tales they were telling were completely one-sided. Here's the crazy part. A lot of the victims of the Charlottesville violence, white and black, right, went onto different sites to collect money. Every single one of the white victims was shut down.
Exactly.
And Harris collected $166,000 on GoFundMe.
Jeez.
So and what did he do with it, Lana? He bought himself a Mercedes-Benz and shot a rap video featuring his Mercedes.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know.
Follow the link.
That's so typical. Yeah, yeah.
He does a rap video in his new Mercedes. He's flinging around piles of cash.
Oh, my God.
And then he's rapping classics like, if a N-word talking reckless, then I'm aim it at his dome. And here's the warning. If your audience, if anyone who gets the book, links to the video, he uses the N-word a lot. So if that offends you, don't listen to his music video, because the N-word is like for him. Here's the weird part. So Harris clubs this guy. He's immediately charged with a felony, malicious wounding. And then he served a warrant and he's out on bail. And then the charge is amended from a felony count of unlawful wounding. To a felony count of unlawful wounding, and then downgraded again to a misdemeanor. Okay, so that's what happens to him. The other three or four or five guys, we really didn't follow it that specifically, who were white guys who were in the garage, who were doxed and found to have hit him, were all sitting in jail, no bail.
Of course.
So this guy clubs a guy in the head, and the other guys who had the fight are sitting in jail.
And this is just one case there, because there were several. I mean, Baked Alaska, he was just attending, speaking of people trying to fundraise, he was actually blind for a while because someone came up and just sprayed some chemical in his face, and he was just watching what was happening. And and he was getting in trouble for it. This guy was literally blind for months.
And the most despicable part of the Baked Alaska attack was that there were actually people who went online to say he's faking it for publicity. I mean,
more that said he deserved it, that Nazi. I'm glad he's blind.
Yes. But even to say he's faking it for publicity, come on, man. So Harris, and then we can move on, because, you know, Charlottesville is, you can read the book, man. Charlottesville is just, we took
it's
that.
A mess. Yeah, apart. It's
but
a mess.
Harris in early 2018, right? He's still awaiting trial for the flashlight incident, and he's on bail, right? And he gets pulled over for speeding. The officer detects marijuana. He finds marijuana. He finds a loaded AR-15 assault rifle under a coat on the back seat. And Harris was facing a misdemeanor charge for the concealed weapon and a second misdemeanor charge for transporting a loaded weapon and, of course, the marijuana. Fast forward, the judge decides what? You know what? Don't worry about it. It's all okay. So they let him go.
Because it would be racist to charge him for those things, you know, because all cops are racist and they target blacks.
Right. And so then we called the judge the mind-reading judge, because he knew that when Harris clubbed the guy, he did not have, it was clear he didn't intend to harm the man, is what the judge said. So I absolutely encourage people to get the book and read that section. It's amazing. We also make the point that, you know, they limited the trials for the white guys who fought back against Harris or tried to protect other people from Harris and his crew with a 2-day trial. Now, let me ask you a question. With this incredible vast amount of video evidence out there, how could you possibly ever do everything you needed to do in 2 days? It's unbelievable.
They already had their minds made up.
There's no, and realize it's two-sided. So you're really only getting 1 day. So anyway, the interesting footnote is the guy who started the whole mess. The fellow that started the whole mess was Charlottesville's Vice Mayor Bellamy, right? Yep. So he's the one who says, oh, it's time to remove the statue. By just a while later, he had to resign from his post because apparently he was publishing all sorts of tweets for years about
very anti-white. Yeah.
No, he hates gays. He hates white people. He thinks horrible things about women. So he was an equal opportunity offender. Right now, though, in 2018, a lawyer, Roberta Kaplan, is now leading a lawsuit claiming that the Unite the Right rally wasn't about free speech, but a direct conspiracy to commit violence. And she's famous for having won the Defense of Marriage Act invalidation in favor of same-sex marriage. But what's interesting to us is she said to a reporter that she had grown up as a Jewish kid in Cleveland, and her whole entire religious education was saturated with imagery and facts about the Holocaust. And because of this, when she saw what happened in Charlottesville, she knew she had to come there. So her co-counsel is another attorney named Karen Dunn, who represented Comet Ping Pong, and also is a veteran debate prepper for Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. So these two attorneys are going out there, and their famous quote is, they want to make sure that if you do this, if you ever try to do something like this ever again, the same's going to happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Charlottesville isn't even close to finished.
No, there's a lot of people involved in lawsuits right now. Ridiculous lawsuits.
Yes, yes. Almost as bad as you can imagine. Then we jumped on diversity. So, you know, maybe it's diversity's problem. And so here's a couple of interesting things. Instead of spending too much time on diversity itself, we decided to go straight to some studies that famous liberals did. And so one of them is a guy named Putnam, and he is a liberal who is a famous researcher who did a study. He's a Harvard political scientist.
Mm-hmm,
okay,
I know the one.
Yep, 30,000 people across America did a whole study, and he determined that regardless of skin color, in communities that are more diverse, people distrust their neighbors regardless of the color of their skin more. They withdraw even more from close friends, and they expect the worst from their community and its leaders. So diversity in communities, Putnam had to admit, did make things less happy.
Less cohesive, trust, less friendly.
Yes. And this doesn't mean that people are enemies or anything. It's just what
I've
is.
I've experienced it. I've lived in it. Yeah. And it's correct.
So Dr. James Moody at Duke University conducted a study of over 90,000 students at 112 different schools across the U.S., right? And the bottom line from his study was that the more diverse the school is, the more that kids self-segregate by race and ethnicity within the school. So our point is diversity really has to be seriously looked at before you can just blanketly say diversity is our strength. Is it really? You know, is it really your strength or is it not? And then, you know, we brought up a point along the lines of, well, if you were building a team for baseball, you wouldn't want all catchers. You need the diversity, right? But where the diversity part ends is you need talented players. You don't want the kid who can't throw the ball. You don't want the kid who can't bat. You don't want, so diversity may be important in a company or a team to make sure you've got different skill sets, but you always want the best and brightest.
Yeah, but now diversity just means, and you know this stuff, and people listening to this know this, but it just means skin color. It doesn't mean talents and abilities, and we already had that before. They act like white people just, no, you had no diverse. It's all about skin color, which is ridiculous.
I know, and I think that's where we came to the conclusion that diversity is actually a farce the way it's being used now. It's not about diversity
it means
strength.
No white people. That's what it means when you get down to it.
Yeah, it's pretty much what we found. And then there was the disparity between that and cultural appropriation. So they want everyone to be diverse, But if you really like something that a different culture has and
but you can't
wear
share.
It,
well, if you're right, white, that is, you can't.
Right. So then we did that story about that poor white girl who wore a Chinese dress to in Utah to her prom.
Oh, yeah.
And was instantly, they descended on her. Oh, my gosh, your cultural appropriation is horrible. And what was interesting, we even went into this whole thing about in China. People in China thought it was a great dress.
Of course.
I thought, oh, she looks great in it.
Meanwhile, these people around the world borrow everything European. Come on.
Yes. Yeah. So us being us, we had to put in sexual appropriation. And we wanted to start a whole movement to push the leftist psychosis further so that they would implode and say, well, wait a second. How about gender appropriation? How can someone born a male who now identifies as a female not be committing the heinous crime of gender appropriation? I mean, for God's sake, it's more than a dress. I mean, are you telling me that someone who is born a male who now thinks they're a female or is identifying as a female, how dare they do that, you know, when they should have lived through all the experiences a little girl would have had to with the face of horrible discrimination on the playground and rise of all sorts of sexual stereotypes and prejudices and the whole menstruation thing. How dare you become a woman? You know? And we wanted to just push that kind of in their face because...
There's just a case yesterday. It was a guy, I was reading the news yesterday. He changed his gender to a female on his license so that his insurance rates would go down, his car insurance rates. It's like, yeah, exactly. And then he gets hell for it. And it's like, well, I thought you could just pick whatever gender you wanted now.
Yeah, that's genius. I guess Lauren Southern didn't do that right then because she went and became a man.
Yeah. Anyway, you're going to get less as a white man. Yeah.
Yeah. So we wanted to just torture them. But at the same time, we also thought there was disparity in this whole social justice warriors going after people who are wearing other cultures. But do you know about Nazi chic? In Asia, there's this thing called Nazi chic.
Oh, yeah. They love the fascist style.
They love it. They wear Nazi uniforms. They march around Nazi things. They do wedding themes of all Nazi clothes and Nazi favors and all this stuff. And so we suggested, now, if you really want to fight Nazis, why don't we pay for the Antifas to take their urine bottles and excrement bags and stuff and fly them to Asia and let them attack real live clothes wearing Nazis. So anyway, at a certain point, we also realized that the word racist was being overused.
And you think?
Yeah. So we go through that whole Bronstein, you know, the real name of the guy who called himself Leon Trotsky. Bronstein was running around totally hating Russians, and he started or may have had a lot to do with the word racism, although some people say, well, it existed before. Whatever.
Yeah, I wonder about Bronstein, that, the first use of it.
Yeah, but we couldn't find definitive examples of so that we could come out and say, here's the quote, here's the reference, and it was first used here. We couldn't. So we didn't, but he was definitely really good at using it. As an aside, do you know about the Mensheviks and the Bolsheviks?
Of course.
Right. Do you know why that was chosen that way? The word Menshevik comes from the Russian word small, Menshevik,
mm-hmm.
small. Bolshevik, like the Bolshoi Ballet, comes from the Russian word big.
Mm-hmm.
What Bronstein and his little crew of, you know, little evil geniuses did is when the peasants of Russia, with many of who were not very well schooled and couldn't really read that well, were forced to choose a party or a side. If you were a peasant and someone said to you, hey, do you want to be part of the Mensheviks or the Bolsheviks? What would you do? You want to be part of the little guys or the big guys?
Big men.
They absolutely used that lexicon in their favor because at the time there might have been a dozen Bolsheviks, maybe 14 if you count Lenin twice. But that was just yet another example that people just don't realize happened because of the language. And let me tell you that continues today where they use language against people and the way they say things, they presume guilt and innocence and all these things. So, but we also go through the FBI statistics, you know, at this point, you know, you're racist if you notice the level of black criminality in America, right? But we have maybe 10, 20 pages of a variety of FBI stats, rape stats, all these different statistics that conclusively show, and listen, quotes from police officers and other authorities that are also saying the same thing, that there is a disproportionate amount of black criminality, especially in black communities, etc. There's a fellow named Colin Flaherty that we also quote, who actually writes books about it.
We know him well.
Okay. And so the bottom line is, even to notice that there is this preponderance of criminality coming out makes you a racist. So I think that at a certain point, telling the truth is racist, and I think that's waking people up as well. And, you know, it's headed towards a place where even free speech is becoming subjective. Like, when can you say it, when can you not? We do an example of the N-word. All these rappers use the N-word all the time. All of a sudden, some white instructor at Southern Connecticut State University is singing along to a rap song, because his thing was, every day you start the day, he chooses a student, hey, play your favorite song and we'll sing to it. He dares to sing the N-word along with the rapper who's singing it, and now, you know, they're asking for him to resign and get out. So that disparity, what's racist? Why can certain people use the N-word? How come certain people can't? It's just, why not everybody stop using the N-word if it's that bad? And I think that there are a lot of different reasons that don't really make sense anymore, because people are just confused. They're confused.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up free speech, because, you know, the left has really used free speech to destroy free speech. They have no principles. You know, but at the end of the day, too, these, you know, thought policing of views, it's not going to stop it. It's only going to generate more opposing views, because we always say this: truth fears no investigation, doesn't need to silence people or send them to prison to protect it. And that's literally where the left is heading, and that the level of censorship and banning they're doing. Eventually, they'll open up the gulags in this country, too, I'm sure. But it's never going to last.
We looked at Europe, because America is a little bit more free speech oriented, because it was protected in the Constitution.
Used to be. Western Europe, forget about it.
But Western Europe's a mess. I mean, there's a 62-year-old woman that was arrested and fined like 1,300 euros because she liked, all she did was she shared and liked an anti-immigrant joke on her Facebook page, right? Yeah, everyone knows about the 89-year-old woman who said, you know, I'm not sure the Holocaust happened that way. She's in German prison for 14 months.
Absurd.
There's a Scottish guy that was really PO'd that they took in another 20,000 Syrian migrants while homeless Scots were in dire straits. So he wrote something that he said, "Yeah, that's not right." And so they, you know, instantly charged him with a hate crime. And in England, a total of 2,500 people in London have been arrested over the past 5 years for allegedly sending offensive messages versus social media. So as far as free speech, England is not in good shape.
No, it's awful. It's absolutely awful.
Oh, here's something that we made kind of a big deal of. All these news medias were so quick to call Donald Trump a racist, right? So we looked into it. Is he really a racist? We couldn't find anything that said it.
Honestly, I don't think he even thinks about it. He genuinely just likes everybody. I think he sees some differences. He understands some things, but he genuinely is not a racist.
I think that's what we found, that there was no evidence of racism or anything like that. But here is what they would say to prove it. Oh, he wanted to ban Muslims. He's racist. So he said all Mexican, he didn't say it, but they were claiming he said all Mexicans are rapists, right? So we went into it and really looked at it. Now, first of all, Islam isn't a race. And that should be obvious to everyone. It's a religion. It's not a race. Mexico isn't a race, you know, and people are so dumbed down that they just swallow it. You know, for the
mestizos,
record, Mexico,
they're mixed race.
Yeah, mestizos, Europeans, Arabs, Africans, Asians, and indigenous people. That's the official definition of Mexico. And loads of Europeans there too. Some Mexicans look more European than Europeans, and some Mexicans look more mestizo than mestizos or indigenous people. So they're even trying to make believe that he's racist because of a race. When he went and said something about the residents of Haiti or Puerto Rico, they say, oh, he's a racist. But Puerto Rico's not a race. Haiti's not a race.
Exactly. But if they think just that, just don't come to America then, if you think that the current president is a racist. Right. Then why do you have to come live here? Yeah. We should be able to protect our borders and say who gets to come and who doesn't come. Every other people does this. Everybody.
Yeah, and one would hope so, because you should keep your doors locked if you want to keep your stuff. So, and then we went over a lot of the stuff that has now become officially racist, like math, science, milk,
funny. It's
luxury
funny.
Cars, yep. You know, et cetera, et cetera. So we just went through a lot of that stuff as well. And and then, you know, the BBC was then saying we only won. That they advertised in 2018 for interns, and they said no whites allowed. And they seriously said that they wanted non-whites for their internships. So, you know, the left can be quote unquote racist, but you know, you can't notice it because that makes you a racist.
It's just funny how things are coming full circle. They whined that there used to be businesses in the South who didn't want to serve blacks at their lunch counters. You know, they forcing them to serve these people. And now they're doing the same thing to white people. Get the back of the bus, or we don't serve your kind here. You can't use this platform. It's just amazing how they don't even see it, you know.
They don't. And then that brings us to the next chapter, which is done with schools. And we went through the indoctrination at the kindergarten and up level, and it was just sickening. I'm not going to go through a lot.
Oh, yeah, teaching kindergartners about anal sex and dildos, and yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, but an even more underlying thing where, they're taught that melanin, there's a thing called the Melanin Project, where they trace out their hands and they color them to reflect their skin color. And they are told, stop thinking your skin color is better than anyone else's. Everyone is special. And the reality is, kids don't think that way. Most kids just bounce around. So they're trying to get them very early on to notice race. And then they start indoctrinating them into some really sick stuff. We detailed the Edina School District and their attack on white students, and specifically decisions like, well, we're not going to study boring, dead white men and what they think. Minorities have had enough of the race, too. There was a great example that we put in there where a fellow that had actually escaped a Marxist government in Central America said, I don't want my kids indoctrinated. That's why we came to America, to be free. This is crazy. The Edina School District also has a program where they have equity and racial justice training, where they teach people like bus drivers to dismantle their white privilege if they want to work there. And it's the core work of white folks. And what they are doing to teachers and staffers is just as bad as you can imagine. There was an effort to really push for all of this type of diversity and whiteness is bad and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yet, you know, when you look at the figures, and I'll leave you with this thought, the worst failures were for black students who had the proficiency scores in this one school for 10th grade black students dropped from 50 to 40%. Math scores dropped from 30 to 14%. Proficiency. So after a couple of years of all this leftist Bolshevik machinations in the school district, the blacks were actually in worse shape. And of course, the hallways became very dangerous. So we go through an example in New York City, where the principal actually started airing movies depicting a blank Black Panther founder and a convicted felon and cop killer as a martyr. So, it like, you know, you can't make this stuff up. So, in any case, the section on the schools of what's happening to the younger kids is shocking. One of the things that we found was the incredible amount of violence in the schools. When this unchecked thing happens, you know, Obama came up with a program. Minority kids are being singled out for punishment and all this stuff, much more than white kids. We've got to fix that. It's a disparity that must be fixed. So what happened is they've stopped. It's like you stop writing tickets for speeding so that you can boast that there's less speeding. And what
in
happened
the name
is,
of equality, right?
Yes. And so what happened is we detail in painful detail a tremendous amount of violence that ensued because the teachers were always blamed. Whenever anyone was attacked, it was the teacher's fault, and the kids who were doing the attacking realized it very quickly. I mean, in one case that we show, this poor teacher had invented a secret knock on her classroom door so that she would know it was safe to open the door to whoever was coming into her classroom, because some of the fellas had decided it'd be funny to just run into classrooms, beat people up, and run out. So she kept the door bolted and needed a secret lock. So, and when she complained, the school district said it was her fault. She wasn't inclusive enough. So this goes on. And by the way, yeah, valedictorians.
We need some order. Huh? We need some order. We need some balls. We need some structure. Let's turn this thing around.
Yeah, I think so, man. I think so.
Walter, I think this is a great place to pause. We can take a break. We can plug your book, and then we'll come back for part two where we can talk about white privilege, Antifa, immigration, censorship, and so much more as you detail in your book. So tell people about Vikings Rising, where they can get a copy.
Yeah, Vikings Rising is exclusively available on Amazon as a paperback, or you can download it as an ebook for Kindle, and it is available now. It's live.
Awesome. Okay, well, this is great so far. I know it's a lot of information we're flying through, and this is really good for you do good books for 101 people that are just coming into the scene, like a good crash course, and I think this book is another one of those.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And it's also a good 201 for people who just want to get really, really depressed.
No, there is light at the end of the tunnel. You have to look at some of the negative stuff before you can see the other side of it, of course.
Yes.
Okay, well, we'll take a break here and we'll be right back. If you like what we do, join us in part two for members at redicemembers.com. Head there now to subscribe and listen. Your membership helps support us so we can grow. We know what to do, how to do it, and with your support, we will. See you on the other side.